Hey, what's going on, podcast listeners? This is Wilson here, and on the other side of the mic, I have my illustrious co-host.
It's Lou.
And for our longtime listeners, it has probably been a little while since you all have heard us doing a bit of an intro like this. For our first timers, you all are getting a bit of a blast from the past. What we're going to be doing here is what we affectionately called a What's Up Wednesday, and we have a featured guest, a friend of the show, all around awesome dude, Jerome Walford of Forward Comics.
Yeah, great to be here with you guys again, and I'm a big fan of the show, so glad to be here with you.
Sweet. So for the next 45 minutes to an hour or so, Lou and I were going to be chatting with Jerome about his upcoming project, which is called the Guan Anthology Volume 2. The first volume of the Guan Anthology was pretty amazing. Lou and I were huge supporters of it, and we picked up our copies, and man, it was just a sight to behold. I gifted it to my little sister, and she loved it also.
That's great.
Yeah. It was definitely a great thing across the board. I'm talking about the immigrant experience. And as we do in our What's Up Wednesdays for the longtime listeners, you know that I, being Wilson, will toss the ball over to Lou, and he will get us underway with the questions as we dig into the content.
Okay, so first thing I want to ask, we have that about third of Volume 2 preview, and looking at it, and comparing it to the first volume. Volume 2 of Guan seems a lot more focused, with a narrow, more powerful scope where it's very clear to transition at this one. Or I would say the first Guan anthology was not just about an immigrant experience, but more broadly about ending up in a new place and discovering.
Right. Yeah.
And this one seems very distinctly about immigration. So can you talk about the focus of this one and how your vision changed from volume one to volume two?
Yeah, sure. So with the second volume, we knew that we want to still be within the theme of taking the immigrant experience and transforming it into these really fantastical interpretations of the experience. One of the things that we want to explore with volume one also was this idea of cultural fusion and what's it like just to be generally in a foreign place or some other tangent subjects, which were cool to explore. But, you know, we sort of felt that if we were to come back and do it again, we want to be really clear, crystal clear about our message. And this was trying to hear from those who are immigrants themselves or those who can really relate to that immigrant experience of being displaced. So when we thought about what to do for volume two, we want to first try to address that very distinctly. And then if we were to touch on something beyond that, then maybe it's about the family experience. What's it like to try to hold on to tradition, trying to pass that on to someone else, or trying to receive that, from someone who's older, like a parent or a guardian. So those two subjects were the two things we want to really tie together and focus on for the second volume, which we thought would be something that would be much more impactful as a second installment in this series.
Got it. Okay, so how did you, source that feedback? Was it just straight from the creators that came to you, or was it more from readers' feedback and collaborators after the anthology was out? Because I know that the anthology got a lot of, play, or it gained a lot of legs in classrooms and things like that, where it was used as a teaching tool to talk about immigration and things like that.
Yeah, I was really amazed because certainly we had certain ideas of how it could be used beyond the scope of just being entertaining to look at and fun to read. But one of the things that we heard back right away after the campaign for the very first volume was that a lot of educators were looking to bring that into their classrooms or into their school libraries as a teaching mechanism for how to process one's own immigrant experience, some of the joy and so also some of the trauma, you know, for kids who had really tough immigrant or refugee situations, and then how to teach others to be more sympathetic to that experience, right? So we want to try to find a way to look at what we did before and saw the things that were really echoing and things that we're hearing from the educators as they were using this material. And so, yeah, it just sort of very naturally over, I would say, about a year, became very distinct that this was the direction we need to go in with this. And so when we started to do our reach out for the second volume, you know, we just got a lot of reaffirmation for that. You know, a lot of the creators that we wanted to pull in, they could really buy into that idea about this being the very distinct direction for the second volume. And I got to say, I'm just really humbled by the submissions that we got, because not only was it really striking, some of these stories in terms of just communicating this idea of legacy and heritage that's been passed on to, you know, someone who's second generation, if you will. But, you know, sometimes you have an idea, right? You think, oh, this would be a good direction to go in. But then once you start to get the feedback on the material that responds to that call, it just takes it beyond a level that I would have thought or expected to see. And, you know, yeah, I'm just really inspired by the work that we're getting for this second volume.
Another thing that sort of stands out to me, but is kind of obvious when you talk about going to a new place, is there's a lot of reference to the ocean and water. Yeah. Do you feel like there is broadly a connection between the immigrant experience and the ocean?
Yeah, there is, you know, and like I was saying before, sometimes you put a call out there and you have a certain direction, right? I think for me, I thought about legacy and I thought about heritage in terms of being fruitful, right? You feel this obligation and responsibility as a second generation to be really productive and fruitful as a result of the sacrifices that were made by, you know, by a guardian or a parent that brought you into this new place, right? Certainly there's a lot, there can be trauma, there can be difficulty, but that effort to travel or journey to another place is usually not for one's own benefit, right? It's for a younger generation to give them more opportunity. And so when I thought of that as being sort of like the way to kind of figure out how this kind of plays out in terms of what we want to focus on for the second volume, I started to see a lot of material that was about not just crossing into a different land, but also crossing the ocean, you know, and water, and a water both being a force for good and for bad, right? And how that plays into the immigrant experience. It was just this thing that kind of came out of the periphery that was just, it was just so obvious once I began to see the material, right, that was addressing this. Right. That I was just like, man, I would not have guessed that or thought of that. So that's one of the things I really like about working on an anthology, right? I mean, when it starts to really gel and things just begin to really jive, like some of these themes just really pop and just really come together and bring a whole new layer of meaning and dimension to it that that you wouldn't have seen in the beginning. So, I mean, literally like at least 20 to 30% of the material that we got was about the sea or about the ocean and how that can be, you know, this force that works with or against you when you're going through this immigrant experience. And so, yeah, I think thematically, you know, not only does it really fit, but again, it's one of those things that we just really appreciate creators bringing that voice and that message into the work.
Word, that's great. So with the, you said twice now about the end result so far of the direction for the anthology kind of exceeded your, you know, like your wildest imagination when you first had the, you know, part two laid out. It with it being focused on, you know, legacy and or the attempt of having it focused, being focused on legacy and all of that stuff, were you, I guess, for lack of a better word, surprised, amazed, you know, like taken aback by how many second generation stories, you know, like were out there that were like super excited to like share those stories via the anthology?
Yeah, there's just so much material out there, right? I think one of the things that certainly concerned us about approaching a second volume is that we didn't necessarily want to repeat a lot of the same direction that we did for the first volume. I think we did a lot with the first volume. We accomplished a lot of things, but I didn't want to just kind of fill out another volume, and, you know, just for the sake of doing it. That being said, you know, there's tons of material out there, just tons of unique approaches to talking about the immigrant experience or transforming it into these fantastical concepts that you could, you know, do a second volume and then like it go in a completely different direction, right? So one of the things that we discovered with volume two was that, yeah, we don't have to necessarily be afraid of like doing a new volume and seeing how it becomes its own entity, because the second volume is kind of its own unique voice, its own unique identity compared to the first volume. So I'll definitely encourage, you know, if someone's thinking about, oh, I had the first volume, you know, how is this going to be different? Yeah, definitely embrace it and check it out, because I think it's very unique and really stands apart and it's, you know, self-contained. But, you know, yeah, certainly beyond that, to your original question, yeah, there's just so many voices and so many different interpretations of the experience that, you know, like you get close to the end of the production process and you're like, oh, this person, we got to get this person in here because <it's, laughs> their voice and their perspective is so unique, and that it brings something to the collection that wasn't there before, wasn't really explored before. So like one entry that comes to mind is by this artist, his first name is Anuj, and he has this really great series of portraits, conceptual portraits of refugees in the Middle East. And I mean, when I met him at one of the shows I was doing, I said, listen, you know, I would love to have you work in this anthology we're doing. I don't know you. I just met you and I love your work. Please, please. I was practically begging the guy, you know, please be a part of this. And so, you know, long story short, you know, I basically followed up and said, you know, because he's certainly very far along in his career. I mean, he's done work for The New Yorker and for some other really high profile clients. And, he has a very distinctive style. So I was like, you know, hey, you know, I'm just going to be honest with you. We have, you know, a good portion of folks who are also very accomplished in their career. They've done really well. But we also have some emerging artists and writers who are just trying to get their break. So, you know, it'd just be an honor just to have you with us. And so, yeah, he basically said, yeah, sure. I'll do this. And so we have a piece by him. And so that's another instance of what, like, we were really far along. I mean, we were probably about 98% full. And I said, you know, if I can get this guy to say yes, you know, I've got to have him along with us. And, you know, I think honestly about 10 of the newest interests that we have happened way after our production process, because I was like, this artist, I need to have that voice in this collection, you know, because they're so unique and they bring something to the table. You could probably continue to walk down the aisles, right, of some of these comic book shows, particularly the indie shows, and meet really talented, diverse immigrant voices who, you know, if we knew who they were and if we knew their stories, we would be compelled to want to read their stories, be compelled to look at their work because it is so moving. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. You know, we want the Guam Anthology to be a place where readers come in and say, wow, I didn't know this artist before. I mean, that's so compelling. I need to go out and find the rest of their work. I need to find what else they're working on, because I am so moved by their story and their perspective that I want to know more about what they're doing and to support them however I can.
Well, that's beautifully said.
Okay, so can you talk a bit about striking that balance between receiving stories that have perspective from a bunch of individuals, putting together something that you set out to put out, and then the discovery of creators you find along the way? How do you strike a balance in bringing this all together into a singly binded piece of work?
It's tough. When I get to a certain point, the hope is, in terms of collecting and looking at submissions, I think certain things just stand out right away, right? That they're polished and they're ready and they're, whether it is from an established creator who has done a lot of work, so they know how to just really hit certain marks in terms of technique. And then certain emerging creators who are well on their way, you don't need to necessarily give them a lot of feedback. You just put all those things together, and it's almost like a bit of a puzzle, right? You're trying to arrange things in a way that makes sense and has a certain amount of a fluid flow to it. And then, honestly, there are some creators, and I mean, we're all in that place, right? We're all growing, no matter how far along we are in our career, where someone coming in from another perspective says, if you tweak this or that, this would really work a lot better, right? And so my job as the managing editor is just to be able to be that voice, be that objective person who wants the work to be at its best. So whenever I see a creator who's, kind of on the bubble, I say, hey, this is looking pretty good. Let's try to tweak this a little bit and see if they're responsive to it. Now, that's part of the experience of being in a group project. And honestly, I think it's along the same dynamic of being in a foreign place and learning how to adapt, right? We learn how to be the best selves we can be. And so I try to bring that to the plate, particularly for this collection, because, it does have a good cause behind it. We want to put out our best work, so that the message really comes across, right? And so, as part of that putting things together, you try to help those who may need a little bit of a helping hand, whether it is in technique or color or, editorial input, to help the entire collection really, rise together. And another water metaphor thing here, right? Rising tide, right? Lifts all boats, kind of thing. So yeah, we're
Right.
all in this thing together. And so yeah, I think part of the challenge is certainly trying to find the best arrangement for all the work. But in addition to that, being able to be really hands-on as much as possible to help those who need to, raise their game a little bit to meet the standards that the really high bar that's been set by some of the, other contributors who jumped on. So of course, you guys probably have heard that Eric Wilkerson is running with us again. He has this really amazing piece there. We also have Eric Battle, who was the artist for a short story that I wrote. And we also have a piece from Royal Coupe's Malaika. I mean, just some really talented people. John Jennings, of course, just a really amazing artist who's one of the first ones actually that kind of jumped in and said he wanted to be a part with us. So, it's been really amazing just to kind of see just the range that we have in this collection and how each new work brings something new to the collection.
Great. So before we dive in a little bit on speaking about, maybe just a few of the pieces that we were able to look at in the preview, one more question that I had on the editorial front was, as you mentioned, when you're going through this group project and you're leaning on people, creating that support system, sort of like when you get into a new, into a new country or foreign land and you have to lean on people. What was your editorial team like this go around, in comparison? Well, not in comparison, but like walk us through your editorial team process, your supporting staff, everyone there who kind of helped you keep this ship afloat and straight.
Yeah, I think the team has definitely grown quite a bit. The first volume, I sort of feel like the editorial work was very much towards the very end of it. I might have done like a couple of tweaks here and there on the first volume from like maybe a visual retouching standpoint. For the second volume, though, I feel like we got involved really early. So, like I was saying
Cool.
before, some of our submissions, they want to get some feedback really early. they want to get some art, you know, particularly on the art, they want to say, you know, this is a good fit or not. And so we were able to give them a lot of response early. And I think part of that was due to the success of the first volume, right? I think that lent a certain level of credibility. They kind of say, okay, yeah, I have this thing that I want to do. That's my own thing. But then perhaps having that editorial feedback is going to help. And, you know, maybe I can trust the team at Ford Comics to do that. And so, you know, we've been able to be, and fortunately so, been able to lend a hand on the editorial side with just tweaking the technique. At this point, you know, we're pretty full in terms of the collection, although I might go to a show and you just never know, right? But, you know, we're basically right about the same size that we had for the first volume. So from a substance standpoint, I think we're pretty solid. But we're giving ourselves a lot more time in the editorial process than we did for the first volume. We're basically going to, right now we're in the middle of the Kickstarter campaign, right? So we're raising funds for that. Once the campaign ends, we're going to give ourselves at least another 2 months, I believe, to go through the material, like with a fine tooth comb. It would be myself and we have, our lead editors, Maya Rock and Rebecca Griffin Green. And we also have some assistant editors jumping in who are going to be, you know, helping out a little bit. And, you know, we have a really great community, you know, who have been supporting us over, you know, the past couple of years. And, we're always reaching out to try to bring people in from our community. So, you know, who knows, we might be reaching out to you guys to lend an editorial hand if you guys are up for it and interested.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
Highly excited. Yep,
absolutely.
Because it's all about, you know, again, sort of having more eyes involved and making much more of a communal experience, right? So right now we have our lead editors working on some of the core mechanics to make sure all the mechanics are right, and then we're going to have our assistant editors just kind of go through it and help us to catch things that we may not be able to catch, you know, by ourselves, because it is such a big collection. There's so much going on. The goal is that by the time it gets released early next year, it's going to have a lot of different eyes, a lot of communal support to get it to be where it could be.
Right. Okay. Another editorial question before we slide. How do you feel? Do you feel like you were more prepared to tackle this having done volume one? And how has your perspective changed on putting this together compared to your volume one process?
I think with the second volume, there's a couple of things we want to do differently from a mechanic standpoint. If anyone's been to the campaign, if you haven't already, definitely go and check it out. Because one of the things that we were really trying to highlight there is that we have a minimum goal that would help us to fund the first print run, take care of our paid editorial staff. And then a stretch goal is a way for us to build in new mechanic where it's not just all volunteer work, but then all of the creators who volunteer their projects will get some honorarium that comes directly out of the fundraise, right? So that's a way for us to begin to think about, you know, people are not just doing it just because they love it. They do love it, but this is their craft. This is what they've worked on, you know, and so we want to honor them. So we know that we can't necessarily compensate them at the level that they should be and that they deserve to be, but we do want to show our appreciation. And so that stretch goal, you know, is something that we really want to hit. We stand a good chance and we're really hoping that will happen because again, the lion's share of that stretch goal is to give this level of gratitude back to our volunteer contributors to just say, we appreciate your talent and your skills. We don't just want to put your work in this format to highlight you, which we think is a great benefit. But on top of that, we want to be able to, you know, give a little gift of love back to you guys.
Great. Make sure y'all hit that stretch goal, guys, listeners. Next question I have is cover of volume two. Like cover from volume one was very clearly inspired by your Curse of the Griffin series. Mm-hmm. And so it was the first story being The River in Volume 1. And Volume 2 looks like it was made for the anthology. And so what is the imagery of the cover of Volume 2, and how did you get into that?
Right. So the cover for, you hit the nail on the head. So the cover for Volume 2 was inspired directly by the overall thematic direction of Volume 2, because not just are we focusing on this idea of legacy and heritage between first generation, second generation immigrant families, but we're also thinking about this idea that this kind of dynamic between giving towards the second generation that comes from the elders is something that's typically inspired by immigrants and refugees that come from really difficult situations, right? So they're coming out of really challenging economic circumstances or environmental circumstances that has forced them to relocate, forced them to start over again. And despite all the challenges and sacrifices they have made, they are now passing on that legacy to the younger generation. That dynamic, that giving to the next generation, is something that inspires them to become really fruitful, inspires them to become really productive members in their new society, right? And so this idea that we should honor and respect those who come out of really challenging economic circumstance as an immigrant. We should honor their efforts because they are, and they do tend to be the most productive in our society just from a data standpoint. I mean, you can just sort of look at that and say, oh yeah, like objectively, you can see that. And so the cover was meant to highlight that because there's been a lot of rhetoric recently that tends to really degrade those who come from very challenging economic situations, right? Those who have really struggled. And so we wanted to say, without like being too political or too out there about it, but we do want to hint and we do want to celebrate that, hey, we know that you came out of really difficult circumstances, but we want to honor that because we know that you'll be just really vibrant, really shining examples of what it means to do your best, to bring your best. And so the cover, the title of it's called Being Fruitful, right? Being Fruitful. And so this idea that we rise up out of these situations that are very challenging to produce all this beauty and all this fruitfulness. And it's just a reflection of the fact that we were able to rise up to bring forward these things. And so that was the inspiration behind it. You know, that was what kind of led into producing that cover. And, you know, I'm just really glad to see that so far the response has been really strong. You know, whenever I take it to a show that I do, just kind of saying, hey, here's the cover for the next book we're working on. Like, it sells out, you know, so fast. You know, I can't hold on to it. And recently also it's been actually featured on a blog that's managed by the Fashion Institute of Technology here in New York. And It's great to get some highlight to the work that we're doing because they were also moved by the imagery. And so we're trying to find a way to talk about these really loaded questions, these really often polarizing issues, but talk about it in a very different way, a way that changes the conversation, changes the way that we talk about it so that it finds a way to bring beauty and civility back to these kind of conversations.
Was the fact that all of this is a very hot topic in the atmosphere right now why you decided to do Guan Volume 2 now?
In some ways, I didn't want it to be the only reason, you know, because certainly the first volume was, it was a timing thing, right? We started out with something that was very personal, but collaborative. That was the ethos behind Guan Anthology Volume 1, and so certainly it just happened to occur right at the time that things were really heating up around this discussion around the immigrant experience. I think for Volume 2, part of the thing was that I didn't want to say, again, rush into just doing it just for the sake of doing it, but we sort of felt compelled that we have to do something. We have to say something in this conversation to, again, bring beauty and positivity back to the discussion about the immigrant experience, right? Because it's this human experience. It's a very relatable experience that to some level we can all relate to it because, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, one or two generations or three generations back, we're all from somewhere else, you know? And so we have to begin to relate to that universal aspect again. So certainly we didn't necessarily want to do it only because of what's going on right now, but on the flip side of that, we could not go without saying something or doing something that would then provide this different perspective on the matter. Because, you know, we just had to, we felt compelled.
Dig that. Yeah. Especially on the last part where you said that one or two or even three generations prior, we were all, you know, we were all somewhere else, came from somewhere else. So there's that level of interconnectedness. And that interconnectedness made me think about the Satori entrance that you allowed us to see in the preview. And I just wanted you to speak briefly about, you know, Johnny Tay and then James O'Reilly and how they came together to create such a beautiful piece that's just striking and also super, I want to say, impressive. Like, you know, the words and just kind of like the script, it imparts so much power.
Yeah, and I was just stunned, honestly. When I saw this industry, I was like, oh my gosh. You know, the short story of it is I've actually known Johnny online for a little while, and I've seen some of his work. You know, he's a really thoughtful writer, and he's collaborated with different artists over time. And so, you know, when I put the call out there, first of all, we said, okay, now that we know by invitation, who's going to set the pace for the anthology. So we had a few entries that were in already that looked pretty strong. And so we said, okay, let's do another. Our first open call is going to be a early submission, right? So you could submit early. And if it's pretty good and it's early, meaning like, you know, you took the effort and the time to submit your work early, then, you know, you're going to stand a better chance of getting in. You know, like they say, early bird gets the worm, right? Mm-hmm. And so I see this piece come in from Johnny, and I was like, dang, you know? It's like, early bird or not, like, we have to do this, you know? This has to be in there. And, it was just like, talking about setting the pace, man. I mean, it was just so strong right out the gate. And so I'm really thankful. And so, yeah, he took a lot of opportunity to just kind of really expand how we read a comic anyway, right? Which is one of the things I really appreciated, too. So, like, not only was the quality really high, but, like, he was breaking out the panels in ways that were really interesting, you know, that I felt was really, was really interesting. Satori is a really great story, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, likewise. Once this is released, listeners, when this being volume two, you all got to pick it up. Satori, you know, just from the preview, I was like, oh man, this really does set a pace. Yeah. It hits you like, oh, a ton of bricks.
For sure.
Next story I wanted to peep is the one that you mentioned that Eric Battle drew that you wrote. Unidentified. I am very, very used to you being sort of an everyman where you've got your own publishing line and you do comics in which you write, draw, color, letter, everything. What made you bring in an artist and colorist for this story?
Well, you know, I think I'm starting to mature a little bit. I mean, I like to do everything. But the reality is you don't grow unless you're able to collaborate in really meaningful, substantial ways with other writers and artists. And so one of the things I wanted to do for a long time is to collaborate on a story where I pull back and, you know, I'm not doing the art, or I'm not doing the writing, or it's some other really major aspect, I'm not doing that work. So I can learn how to communicate effectively, so I can learn how to script effectively, whatever skill or whatever position I'm holding, I'm doing that well, and I'm really focused on that. So I can sort of lend my input on certain things, but I have to allow the artist to really like shine, right? And so, you know, I thought to myself, what's a story that I would like to do, but I'm able to have enough distance to bring someone in? And this is one of those stories that I thought, okay, it's basically a really dense short story. So it's only 4 pages. And I thought, okay, who do I know that I really want to work with? First of all, there's a lot of people out there I want to work with. But Eric Battle is someone I've wanted to work with for a long time. And so I said, Eric, I know you're super busy, but I've got this really short story. I promise it's really short. It's only 4 pages. It's only 4 pages, man. Do you have time?
I'm not lying.
Do you have time? I was like, you know, whatever we got to do to make it fit on 4 pages, just let's figure it out. But I really want to work with you. And so, and that's one of the things too, right? I mean, as a creator, sometimes you have to just put yourself out there and say, you know, you want to have enough dignity to like to grow, but then you also want to be earnest too, right? Because I think, at least to me, that says a lot when you're able to be earnest. So I was really earnest with him and said, you know, I really want to work with you. You know, I know you're busy, but, you know, can you make some time? And sure enough, he said, yeah, I am super busy, but I'll make some time to work with you. And so I sent the script and I said, you know, what do you think? And he was like, Jerome, I love this story, man. I really want to work with you. So we just went at it. And it was just like, I was just amazed at what he came up with. Like his vision was like, it was like what I was thinking, but like he had his own spin to it, right? And that's what I was saying before. Like he had to be willing to grow and let go a little bit so that others can step in and bring their voice to it. I mean, thematically overall, that's what the anthology is about. It's about making space, making room for others to come in, you know, to take that vision and transform it in ways that, and angles that you didn't see before. And, you know, if it fits, if it works, you know, there's a little bit of a give and take. If it fits, then, you know, you got to make room. And so sure enough, I mean, Eric came in and he just really took this thing to another level. And I said, you know, yeah, this is it. This works. And so like there's some things where I was like, yeah, you know, I would have done it differently, but like this totally works. And it's like, it's better that it's not just me doing the work. It gives me a way to think about, okay, when I do work in the future, how can I begin to make room for others? How can I grow? And how can Forward Comics grow, right? I mean, like the fact that in this anthology, we're going from our initial editorial team of 2 people, like, and really like committing to have more people on board with that, you know, that's how we're going to grow as a company, just structurally, and also how we're going to grow in terms of our vision. And so this was another unique example where just in a very microcosm of 4 pages, I could sort of figure out how to work on that better. And then Eric said, I know this guy, this really talented colorist who I think is going to really knock this out of the park. You know, can we, you know, I would recommend him to do the colors. And I was like, let's do that, you know? So we connected with Brian. And, you know, I've actually known Brian's work for a long time. And like, it just like didn't connect until, you know, Eric said, you know, yeah, Brian's like he's like the guy that has done all this really amazing coloring work. And so he came in, and then it was like another leap, right? Literally just seeing this short story, Unidentified, take shape, because, you know, he brought his vision to it as well. And the 3 of us were just, it was like jazz. I mean, it was just like another level that, you know, I couldn't do by myself. It was pretty cool.
That is levels of, that's continual levels of separation. I can hear the growth. First, you had to decide you weren't drawing the story. Then you used a colorist that was recommended by your artist and not directly by you. So, I can hear the growth of the experience in your explanation.
It's so freeing to hear it. It's like, wow, yeah, I can definitely go out there and find a person who then can find another person, and I feel confident that what we'll end up with will be a home run.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to do that. You know, as independent creators, I think there is that push and pull, right? Sometimes we get into it because, you know, we didn't have an open door before. And so you kind of feel like you have to take it on your shoulders, right? And it's okay to do that for a little while. And it's cool to be able to have those moments in your career when you can really kind of carry all those different responsibilities to get a finished product. But, you know, again, whenever you can, you gotta open it up. You gotta find ways to collaborate because, you know, no one can carry the entire, project at all times on their shoulders. I think, yeah, it's a level of maturity that I'm hoping that I'm getting to at this point in my career where I can begin to have those kind of collaborations and do it more frequently.
We understand letting go a bit ourselves. Our current season of the podcast, which is on mid-season break right now, we've let go of editing, scoring duties, and we have people outside doing a lot more. So I can sympathize and understand the process you're going through.
That's good.
So now I've got a quick question on a few of the single page images, I guess, or entries for just from the preview. So first one, dealing with Hillary Wilson, who I'm not familiar with, but you know, her Goddess of Fertility entry is eye-catching, for lack of a more elegant phrase. And just, you know, looking at her colors and the textures and the tones, I was just like, wow, like, how did you come upon her? And, you know, just, yeah, when she said, yeah, I'm on board, were you expecting this?
So this was one of those situations where, when we're working on the anthology, you know, you have a hyper sense of awareness about things that you're seeing and how they resonate with where you're going in terms of direction. And so this whole thing about, you know, being in fantastical places or things that are unexpected, and then this whole idea of being fruitful. And so I was scrolling through my Instagram and I saw this image, right? I saw it, and I was, because she had done this piece as a portrait of her sister, I believe. And I was like, I have to reach out to her. Like, she probably doesn't know me from like a hole in the wall, you know, because sure enough, you know, I'm sure that, you know, again, at her level in her career, you know, if you've seen her work on Instagram, you know that she's pretty far along and she has a great skill. And so, you know, I just reached out to her and said, listen, I'm doing this anthology, and not only would I love to have you in the anthology, but this is the image that we want to have. This is the one that we think would be a great addition to the showcase of artists, you know, because again, we envision that these still images are showcases that helps readers to connect with an artist and say, this artist I love that I've never seen before, and I want to go out now and find the rest of their work. And so this is one of those images, you know, this is one of the images that we said, we have to have it in the anthology because it's going to do just that. People are going to say, I have never heard of this artist before. I need to go out and find them. I need to go and buy whatever it is they're selling because their work is amazing. And so yeah, I think thematically the image was a great fit. And it really was, again, this idea that you can see someone who has a really unique voice on the theme, but, you know, they should be doing well. And so if they haven't broken through yet, let's help them to do just that. Just give them a little bit of support, a little bit more visibility, and help them to, you know, achieve a new level of success by highlighting their work. Because I tell you, I mean, this piece, Goddess of Fertility, was like one of those images where I said, you know, I'm going to reach out, you know, and see if this artist is willing to you know, to be a part of this thing with us.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking at this and I'm captivated, and I'm definitely going to check out more Hillary work and just see what's there for me to purchase and potentially adorn my walls with.
Another thing that's different format-wise in terms of Volume 1 and Volume 2, your single-page image submissions all have a sort of a paragraphish caption and not just the artist name and contact. What was the thought behind that decision?
You know, I think for... yeah, I think that's one of the lessons learned from the first volume, because certainly you could put in a really impressive image and someone might look at the contact information and say, yeah, I want to reach out to this artist. I want to follow this artist. But sometimes you want a little bit more, you know, to kind of like help the reader to connect with the reason behind that image for the artist. And I think that there are several images that just kind of speak for themselves. And there are other images that do speak a lot, but sometimes, you know, we might need a little bit more of a breakdown in terms of what's going on behind the image. And I think that for the single image entries, a lot of them could have used that. And so we learned that lesson from Volume 1. We're applying that in earnest to the second volume. So practically all the images, particularly if they're, you know, by someone other than myself, they have these descriptions that helps the reader to break down the meaning behind that particular image and how it might connect with another thread from elsewhere in the anthology. So we thought it's a great addition to help the readers to learn a little bit more about the image. But also, I think within a lot of those descriptions, you know, is a little bit more about the artist's background, because I think that also helps to bring another element to it. Like, you might learn about the image and it's kind of cool, but then you're like, oh, that artist, this is their inspiration behind why they do this kind of work that they do. And so that might be the motivation to learn more about them and their background, because you might connect with their background or their story about their development as an artist.
Hey, so I hear you talk about that, and I think of there's other comic anthologies out there who are that, are really involved and really deep into sending the message and having the collection they want. And you seem very strongly motivated by the idea of having people on the bubble improve as they enter the anthology and then having people be able to find the contributors to the anthology. Why is that a motivation that you don't let slip when you're trying to have the goal of the anthology be prevalent?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be able to have that level of, you know, giving back to, particularly to those who are like right on the edge, right? They're emerging creators who, you know, clearly might have really strong skills in the visual side of it or the storytelling, but then whether it is in terms of technique, you know, or some other really important aspects like lettering or coloring, you know, I think, you know, my development as an artist, learning how to color well has really helped me to be more effective with my work, right? So while not every, you know, I'm just using this as an example, but like not every work has to be in full color, but if you do apply color, then it needs to have a certain level of, you know, finesse to it, right? And so, you know, there are a couple of entries where we thought, yeah, this is like a really strong entry, but like if the color was tweaked just a little bit, you know, like maybe another 15 degrees, it would really, you know, it would really pop. And so, you know, we found that whenever an artist was like really close, I mean, like sometimes we try to communicate that, but I'm not sure how it comes across sometimes, but we say like, dude, you're so close, like, you know, just tweak from a story standpoint, tweak these things, or from an art standpoint, tweak these things, and like we feel that you'll be much stronger. Now, in terms of the actual story, we try not to get into that too much. We do respect each person's creative voice, and not every entry is a fit for what we're trying to do, right? So we're not going to tell someone how to write their story. You know, I try to really safeguard against that, you know, trying to find what the right balance is. That being said, I'm not going to tell someone what story to write, but in terms of the technique of telling that story, or more importantly, on the art side, you know, because I might give some technique advice on writing, but for me, I think like my strength is really on the art side, the visual side. So I'm more likely to give a lot more feedback on the art. And so again, like if someone's really close, I'd say, you know, tweak these things here, or if on the visual art side, you need me to kind of come in there and help you to do these things, whether it is rework the lettering for you or tweak the colors a little bit, we're more than happy to do that. Because again, a lot of these creators, they're doing voluntary entries. And so we want to make sure that they get a huge benefit on the side of that. So whether it is they get that coloring support or lettering support at no cost to them, then I think it gives a really good trade-off in terms of them getting something in return for being a part of something with us. And, you know, again, volunteering at the onset in the hopes that not only are they getting this benefit of that support without cost, but then of course, you know, on the stretch goal side of it, if, you know, the campaign does really well, then certainly they will also get an honorarium on top of that as well.
So now the last question I've got, you know, at least on my end, for real, deals with reflections on the C entry by Kayla and Colette. Just, you know, wanted to get a little bit more about the background from their entry and, you know, how you felt once you read their, right, you know, read what they said.
Can I add to the question before you?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, for sure.
Because you've talked very much about themes of legacy and immigrants moving to create better opportunities for their children. And so when you draw a line from your parents to yourself to your kids, how do you just see that in your children's participation in the Gwan Anthology overall, and then more specifically about what they contributed?
Right. So one of the things that we thought about initially from a theme standpoint for this anthology was that we wanted to really emphasize this idea of legacy, and then try to find whenever is possible for creators to submit work that maybe they partnered with, you know, either their parents or their children to create an entry, right? So this whole idea that, you know, if the creative gene happens to run in the family, that they could collaborate on a project. And so that's one of the things we put out there as part of our early call to try to find entries that, you know, involve some level of collaboration. And so we didn't necessarily want to make it like a rule, like people had to do that kind of thing, but we definitely put it out there. And so, you know, I want to kind of just see what would happen, you know, just kind of giving my kids a little bit of room, you know, to see their creativity. And so I, you know, told them about, you know, what's behind the Gwan Anthology, why am I doing it, and seeing what they would say. So sure enough, we as a family had gone on a walk to this kind of like this like boardwalk. It was kind of like a weekend thing. And, you know, I don't think they were necessarily thinking about, you know, quote unquote, creating a story or creating a narrative, but they were just kind of like just doing their thing. And they came up with these little short stories about the sea. And sometimes I think we often put creativity in a box, right? We say, okay, now we're going to do creativity from this time to that time, right? It's going to happen in this window. We've got to be pretty productive. But then sometimes when we just leave room, just some really cool things happen. And so when I saw the stories that they wrote about reflections on the sea, and all three of our kids had done this little exercise, I thought, these will be really amazing to have in this collection, because not only are they being creative, right? And, you know, they're going to indulge daddy's crazy idea about doing this book. Daddy's wild ideas. You know, I said, you know, would you be okay with me putting these little short stories into the Gwan Anthology? and as your way of expressing your creativity. And they were like, yeah, sure. and, you know, I think for me it has become this way to fulfill that goal that I wanted to have, was to create this space where we could see how the immigrant experience and creativity begin to, you know, cross generations. And so they did these little short pieces, and all three did it, but my oldest daughter, she's the one that did the watercolor portraits. And when I saw those together, I was like, I was so moved. I mean, I'm kind of, I'm kind of lost for words now as I'm thinking about it. But I mean, this whole thing about legacy is really important to me. This whole thing about being able to pass on something to our kids as a result of the things that we have learned as immigrants and as the children of immigrants, and being able to pass that on to the next generation is really important to me. And I suspect it's really important to a lot of people too. And so when they see these entries, I hope that's what they see. It's not just a dad who happens to be writing a book trying to, like, you know, put his kids out there in terms of just people seeing their work. It's really with the goal of showing how we can pass on a legacy of remembering the struggle of being an immigrant, remembering how to be productive, and bringing that in connection with creativity. I think that's the goal for me. And I think it was one way, looking at their short reflections on the sea was a way to, again, really solidify this idea of how important it is that water and the sea and the ocean can be forces for good and evil. And it's just a matter of how we see it and how we interpret it as a part of our own experience. And then being able to communicate that to someone else, I think we can begin to find these echoes. And certainly we did with these other entries that were specifically about the sea, about the ocean, and how that played a role in their experience. And so having their entries alongside of these other really talented, really far along artists was a way to begin to, you know, show how these themes echo throughout generations.
So with all your kids growing up in the States, how do you in general make sure they know the legacy of where they came from?
You know, there are lots of different ways to do it, right? And different families have ways of producing that. So whether it is through the exercise of certain traditions, so whether it is certain gatherings at certain times in the year, that can be really important, right? Like Thanksgiving, we're right on several more days here, you know, two or three days here, it will be Thanksgiving. And so an event like that can be a way to preserve that connection between generations and being able to pass that on. You know, something as simple as being able to gather together for a meal is a really important way to have that physical presence together. But it could be through, you know, objects that we pass on, right? It could also be through stories. You know, I think for me, stories, passing on stories is a really important way that we are able to pass on that legacy and that remembrance of the experience. And so I'm thinking specifically about some of the other short stories I have in this particular anthology, and how for me, they're a very clear interpretation of the theme, right? Taking your immigrant experience and transforming it into a fantastical story that communicates a central truth about an experience. And so for me, Unidentified is a very clear example of that. I also have another short story in there that you guys haven't seen before, but it's called Rice. This is a very short title, Rice. And this story is actually very closely based on my own experiences as a kid. And so being able to find ways to transform those stories and communicate those stories to the next generation is that way of building a remembrance and appreciation for what we go through various generations. I think that certainly the hope is that when we're passing on these stories, and I think each family does this in different ways, passing on those stories helps to make the next generation stronger. It teaches them about that they belong to something bigger than themselves, and then that it helps them and equips them in ways that makes them more effective to go out there and achieve whatever it is they hope to achieve.
Right.
So, yeah, that's dope. Very well said. Very well said. So I've had my fill. I don't have any more questions.
That's good. We have solved all your problems.
all my problems right now. But no. Seriously. Everything you said so far has been super insightful and just refreshing to hear. And I guess with the time that we have left, you know, if there's anything that we haven't asked you or anything in general that you just want to let our listeners know about with respect to the anthology and with respect to what's coming up with Forward Comics, you know, you've got the floor.
Thank you. So certainly please check out the Kickstarter campaign for Guan Anthology Volume 2. Again, we're super focused on this right now because we think that it is a major expression of growth for us that we're able to come back to this anthology and do something really distinctive with it. So we really hope you'll support us through the campaign. In correlation with that, I just received an amazing new honor. I was able to do an in-depth interview with the American Writers Museum. And that is going to be part of a exhibit that's going to run, it's actually just opened up. It's going to run from this month of November all the way through spring of 2020. It's called My America. And again, it's with the American Writers Museum in Chicago. So if you are located in the Chicago area, please go by the museum and check it out. The exhibit is called My America. It's an interactive video interview with several immigrant writers in America, and they have recorded them and did this really amazing installation. So you've got to go there and check it out. That's really a major development. And so I think that in correlation with the Guan Anthology and this new volume has really helped us to be in a really better place as a company at Forward Comics, trying to do things in this particular space and doing it in ways that are just very different and distinctive.
Lou, you got anything that you want the listeners to get hip to about, you know, Guan or Forward Comics or anything else before we wrap it up?
I just high levels of praise for Forward Comics and what they do.
Thank you.
Anthologies work in this way where when you bring a lot of voices together and it has a really cool vision, it's something that I always cape for myself. I know I'm only into the Kickstarter. It's holiday time. Some holiday
giving. It is holiday giving, that's right.
And you would also be giving yourself the gift of perspective. And I think the more perspectives you have on the world, the better vision you can form about the world and your place in it. So pick this up, y'all.
Yeah. And yeah, co-sign everything that Lou just said. It's definitely a must to pick up and, you know, hit the Kickstarter up, pledge early, get your pre-order things in, you know, pledge as much as you can and definitely expect to see an amazing product. To sign off, you know, we appreciate all our listeners who've been listening to us. We appreciate all our first timers and our long timers. And, you know, this is a nice little, I guess, flashback to the past, as I said earlier on, with how we used to do our What's Up Wednesdays. It was pretty dope to do this again. So, as always, y'all, you know, you can follow us on Twitter, which is at PolyevPod. And then my personal Twitter being Word to Wilson, and Lou's personal Twitter being
Shenz DeGrio. That's Shens underscore duh, D-A, griot, G-R-I-O-T.
Yeah. And you can always check our content out on your favorite podcast listening device, which you're probably using right now. And then you can also send your friends to our website, which is polyif.com, for you to check out even more of that stuff that we've had there. And yeah, once we get back from mid-season break, you will have the last three episodes, the second half of our Rico and Sueños season. And if you haven't checked the first three episodes out, do that using, your favorite podcast listening device. But yeah, this has been the Power of Human Fiction podcast, a nice little What's Up Wednesday special. And we're wishing you all the best and have a happy holidays.
Okay, wait, don't unpress record because there's a random not going to be in this episode thing I'm going to ask. Jerome, when you talked about like those three times you've had to pivot over the course of your thing, what major pivots came to mind and how did you go through those?
So when Forward Comics first started, actually, yeah, this was like a while back. So I believe it was 2012. We were first like an online magazine. And so we were kind of like a webcomic with maybe like 30% of like other things that we thought were just interesting, but not like just like every other comics, blog out there. We wanted to do like a lot of indie stuff. And then like 6 months in, we're like, yeah, this is not working. There's just too much of that out there. So we just kind of like let go and said, let's just focus on just the comic. And then we're doing a webcomic for a little while. And we're like, yeah, that's cool. But like for me, it wasn't working either. And so like it was another major pivot to say, yeah, we're gonna focus on primarily on doing print comics. And that's when we started to get some traction, from doing that. Yeah. So I understand, like whenever you start with an idea, you're always like trying to find the angle that helps you to focus on what you're really passionate about. Then, even though some other things might be cool, you're saying, yeah, you know what? It's cool, but like, is it central to what I really want to do? Like, am I really passionate about this? And I think sometimes it can take a while to find the right answer. But like, once you do, it kind of helps you to be more focused in terms of your direction. And, hopefully it gets you closer to where you want to go by being able to, kind of redirect your energy.
Right.
Cool. But yeah, I still had that on the record, so that we can hold on to it for posterity's sake. And
yeah, if it helps you guys, sure.
Yeah.
No, but this is a good time though. Thing.
Yes, we definitely appreciate it, and it's just always dope. Always dope.
For sure, right? I appreciate it. Yes. Sure.
Yeah. Alrighty. So, good to go, Lou. I'm gonna kill the
right, awesome.
Here.